Very good. We're going to call the Property Tax and Local Sales Tax Division to order. And we're going to go a little bit out of order on this. I think we'll wait for the Representative Lane's bill towards the end. But Representative Kahn, you are here. All right. There you go. We will go then to House File 1477, the Liebling bill. I saw Representative Liebling. I want to spend at least 45 to 50 minutes on Representative Lanning's bill and leave that time frame. So, which means we have, about 20 minutes to cover four bills or so, 30 minutes. So, with that, members who have bills up, if you would keep that in mind. So, we don't have a quorum yet, so we can't lay anything over. But Representative Liebling, welcome to the committee, and if you would present your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill. And when I heard you say that Representative Lanning had 40 minutes, I was afraid you were saying that I had 40. Oh, my gosh. I don't want 40. I want just a very few minutes here. And this bill that I have is we have a bonding project in Rochester to expand and renovate the Mayo Civic Center. This bill is very narrowly tailored to provide the local match for that project. To the degree that it looks like, if it does, and I don't think it does, but to any degree that it might seem to be anything broader than that, that's not what we want, and we're going to be looking again with House Research to make sure that this is very narrowly tailored just to provide the match for this project and to be done when that match is paid. What it is a 1%, a new 1% food and beverage tax, restaurant tax, and an increase to Rochester's existing lodging tax of another 1%, so from 4% to 5%. So that's what it is. And we have, when you look at hotel taxes around the state, we are, Rochester is lower now than several other cities. St. Paul has a 6%, St. Cloud 5%, Duluth 6%, Bloomington 7%, Minneapolis 6%, Rochester right now is at 4%. So what this bill does is it gives the Rochester City Council the authority to raise that to 5%. And to institute the 1% food and beverage tax. So I want to be really clear about that. This is giving the Rochester City Council the authority to do this if they so choose, and very strictly limited to for the local match for this particular bonding project. So if members have questions, I have helpers here with me who can probably answer better than I can, but that's pretty much the gist of the bill.
Thank you very much. I would like House Research, to distinguish between the food and the beverage and the local option sales tax, which of course there's a moratorium on right now, and you know, the 1 cent tax but Ms. Dalton, if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, although food and beverage taxes do require special authority just like a general sales tax, they are not subject to the kind of general sales tax statutes in 297A.99. We have allowed these in the past. Duluth, Mankato, Minneapolis, and St. Cloud all have food and beverage taxes, essentially to pay for convention centers. And this bill is very limited. If there is no state funding for this project, they can't impose this tax.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Liebling or any of the testifiers and or potential testifiers? Is there anyone here that would like to speak for or against House File 1477? If not, Representative Liebling, any closing thoughts?
Well, thank you again for hearing the bill, Mr. Chair, and you know, just that we think that right now it's especially important to have projects that bring in funding from other places, and this is what this project is. We really think that this is a very fair way to pay the local share, because the users of the project will be paying a lot of this money through the hospitality industry, And we had a little discussion beforehand that if we wanted to call this a fee, we could do that. We could call it a hospitality enhancement fee or something like that, because that's really what it will do. It'll help. Rochester already has a lot of conventions and brings in a lot of people from both nationally and internationally, and this would really help to boost that, and we think to boost the economy of the state through that as well. So thank you again.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for coming up from Rochester today. So thank you very much. We don't have a forum yet, so we can't lay that over. So thank you very much, Representative Lieben. Next, we're going to go to House File 481. Representative Kahn, are you ready? You may proceed. Representative Kahn, you also have an A1 amendment that we could move. We can't move now, but we can move later. Did you want that to be added? Okay.
Yes, that's suggested.
You may proceed, Representative.
Okay. I think this bill is to modify the area in which the special Minneapolis Convention Center tax applies to exclude a certain property. And I have Mr. Tom Johnson here to explain all the details.
Okay. And Mr. Johnson, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Johnson with the Great Plant Moody Law Firm, but also a neighbor and a frequent user of Alma Restaurant, and the owner of Alma Restaurant, Alex Roberts, is sitting right behind me.
Very good.
In 1986, the city came over to the legislature and asked that a downtown taxing district be created, and so that the city could sell bonds to fund the expansion of the convention center, and they were then proposing to add a 3% tax to food and liquor sold at the restaurants within that taxing district. The legislature approved that, including the boundaries of this taxing district. The taxing district, for the most part, is the downtown area of Minneapolis, as you would think, but it also comes across the river onto the east bank over by the University of Minnesota. They did that because they wanted, at that point, to include River Place, which was a new development, and they were running trolleys from the convention center over to River Place. Well, they came across the old 35W bridge and drew the line along the riverside of the University Avenue. Didn't matter because there was many places along University Avenue that were restaurants that, or bars that would qualify for this tax. Then come 1998, and restaurant Alma sees a building on the riverside of University Avenue that they would like to open a restaurant in. By this time, that building has been rezoned. It's no longer commercial. It's a residentially zoned property. And so it was a big deal to get the city to even approve having a restaurant in there. But it is there, but subject to a lot of conditions, such as they can't sell hard liquor, they have to close at 11 o'clock, they have to have certain parking spots, no entertainment, that those kinds of conditions. So unknown to Alma when they opened, or to anyone else for that matter, they were in the district. And they didn't pay the 3% add-on tax. They paid all their other taxes, but not the add-on tax. And this went uncovered until the Department of Revenue, in a routine audit, discovered that the tax was being unpaid and that there was a sum owed of about $115,000 for the previous 3 years. They went to Alex Roberts went to the city and said, "Oh, that can't be true. You're not in the district." Well, it turns out that they are. And what you have in front of you is a resolution to this issue, which is that restaurant Alma will get withdrawn from the district, and that withdrawal occurs because through the language that any restaurant or bar that's operating on a residentially zoned property is excluded from the district. And I think Alma is the only one. Does the city think Alma is the only one? So that happens, but because when the Department of Revenue made the discovery that this tax was unpaid, they and issued a notice of tax adjustment, they actually did pay the city of Minneapolis the money that Alma should have been paying the DOR. Okay. And so this delays the removal of Alma from the tax district for about a little over 3 years. during which time the tax will continue to be collected and paid to the Department of Revenue to pay it back, the $115,000. So 3 years from now, Alma is out of the district and everyone has been paid.
Okay. And Mr. Johnson, how is that $115,000 paid?
It would, Alma, ever since being told that they were in the district, has been collecting the 3% add-on. It will continue to do that and pay the department that money back through the tax.
Oh, okay. Very good. Oh. Thank you. I think that explains it well. Any questions from committee members? If not, then...
It's a terrific restaurant.
Yeah. Very good. Is there anyone here in the audience that would like to speak for or against House File 481?
Seeing you may proceed. Mr. Chairman, my name is Dean Ranieri. I'm with the City of Minneapolis. I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Director. The City, the Department of Revenue, and the restaurant worked this out. We did pass the resolution, and it's part of our legislative agenda supporting this piece of legislation.
Very good. Thank you. Seeing no questions, Representative Kahn, any other questions? If not, I think we do not have quite a quorum yet. So what we will do when we have a quorum is lay over your bill for possible conclusion as amended. We will have that amended in, amendment included. So
okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
So,
we are going to move to House File 1724, Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. What this bill does is it allows the county some more flexibility in some of the funds that they have. I discovered a few months ago that Pine County has almost $2 million in a fund that is designated for timber restoration, and they really don't need that money. It's just been building year after year after year, and they asked if we could possibly allow them to use the money for something else, which I thought was a good idea. So if I could, I would ask Karen Baker to give us a little bit of background on this, and I want to thank her for all the work that she did on this. She actually ended up doing quite a bit of research on this because to find out how much money all of the counties have, there wasn't any one place that she could go and find it, and so it was really quite difficult for her to get that information, which I believe is in your packet. And so if she could start by just giving us a little bit of background, and it looks like I maybe caught her off guard on that request.
So, well, very good. Ms. Baker, would you care to give a little background on this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what this bill does is there is an account that is set up, I was just looking for it real quick, that when property goes tax forfeit, the net proceeds from the tax forfeited property go into this account that is in 282.08. And that those dollars are used for a variety of purposes. It starts out, it pays the taxes back, it pays special assessments, and then after other costs have been paid, then it distributes dollars to the various taxing districts. And the first thing it does is it sets aside no more than 30% of the receipts for this forest development on tax forfeited land and dedicated memorial forests, which is what Representative Faust is referring to. And then the additional money goes to other taxing jurisdictions. So the account that Representative Faust is going into does not affect any of the other taxing jurisdictions. This is just the 30% amount that's been set aside as part of this kind of pecking order for how this money is distributed from the tax forfeited account. What you see on the table here is work that we did in looking at the state auditors from the state auditor's office, where counties submit all of their information on all their funding, and we went into and looked at the forfeited tax special revenue fund, which is where these dollars should be. And as you can see, there's about 42 counties that they did have the special revenue fund. 2006 and 2007, we used two different years because we were looking for the most recent year that the county showed as having some dollars in this account. And you can see that the amounts ranged from in the those couple places where there's negative amounts, we didn't pursue that I guess we could have spent more time on this, but they were pretty small amounts that you can see in Lake of the Woods and Meeker. But most of the counties, they have varying amounts from, you know, in the $10,000, $11,000, $15,000 all the way up to Cass County, which is the highest one that has $3.3 million. And right now, those funds are dedicated, and they can't be used for anything except for this forest development and Memorial Forest. And what Representative Faust's bill does is it's a two-year bill that in effect allows counties, if they so choose and if they have money in these accounts, to draw up to the amount of the aid loss for county program aid and for the homestead market value credit, the dollars that they've lost because of cuts or unallotments. And it says that they have to draw it, I think, is it within 60 days? For 6 months, I'm sorry. They have to draw it within 6 months, and that's so that they don't, 2 years from now, decide that they want to go back, and Representative Faust wanted it to be a time certain, so. So if there's any other questions?
Ms. Baker, maybe you said this. So where would these, this would just fit in this account, normally, these dollars? And there's no authority to spend it other than for what?
Mr. Chairman, these dollars just continue to accumulate, and maybe the commissioner would like to make some comments from the counties, but I think the dollars, if you don't use them for these purposes, then they just sit there. And, you know, I would guess if we did a history search that this is something from, you know, many, many years ago, and they had decided that the tax forfeited lands, of which a lot of them are up in northern counties where you have a lot of timber property, they must have decided that that portion of it should be used on timber development, and it just has never been changed or expanded.
So, Mr. Chair, if I can, I have one of the county commissioners here from Pine County, and so if we could let him talk a little
bit.
Very good.
Commissioner? Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Holland from Pine County, Commissioner, and thanks for the opportunity to be here. One of the things we would normally do with this money is forest management enhancement. Our county forests and are typically a pretty large part of our budget and as far as income goes. But right now, timber sales are not the best, and so we have some projects that we would just as soon kind of put on hold and be able to tap some of this money to put back in our general revenue fund if we needed to. If you remember about the last week of December, our fiscal year ends December 30th, and to get whacked $300,000+ in local government aid a week before the end of your fiscal year, it's kind of a hard pill to swallow. So we're trying to get through this next budgetary time, and we see money there that could help us possibly do that. We don't have a lot of property that if we even wish to raise taxes on, it would take a significant raise to generate you know, $250,000 to $500,000, and we would sooner not do that.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Representative Lane.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple questions for Ms. Baker, if I might. Ms. Baker, the counties that don't appear on this list, how would you characterize those? Are those counties that have very little tax forfeited land, or have already found uses for whatever money's in that? How might you characterize those that are not on this list?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, I would characterize it basically the way you described it. I think it's counties that, first of all, probably don't have much tax forfeited. But in addition, the little tax forfeited that they do have, they've used for these purposes. There just hasn't been that much available. If the account isn't there, we have to presume that it's because there just aren't any dollars in that account, and that they've been used. So, you know, I think a county, for instance, like Clay County, probably doesn't have the same type of use as if you look at this, like St. Louis County and Clearwater and in Beltrami and a lot of the northern counties that have a lot of this open land.
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a follow-up. The counties on here that have pretty good sums of money, I mean, million, $2 million, $3 million, how might you characterize those? I mean, other than the fact that they obviously have a lot of forest land, what else might you say about why they have such a large sum?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, I'm not really sure how to, if you look at a lot of those counties, a lot of them are northern counties, and they have a lot of that type of land, a lot of open rural land, and these amounts may have been accumulating for years, and they just are not utilizing them, because when you only have one purpose that you can spend it on, if the county commissioners decide they don't want to spend money on that, the money just sits in the account, because it's very, very restrictive as to what you can use this money for, this portion of the county's allocation.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question. Ms. Speaker, how could any county run a deficit in these funds? I mean, there must be a law somewhere that says that says you need to fix this or you need to correct this.
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, I think it's probably, if you look, for instance, at the footnote like for Stearns County, you can see that what they're doing is they're commingling some funds, and they're putting like gravel tax, and I'm not even sure what missing heirs and other funds are grouped together, and I have a feeling that they're grouping smaller accounts together and throwing it into this, and that it's not significant enough that, you know, obviously the state auditor hasn't been concerned about it, or they just use this as a general account. And I can sure pursue and find out, for instance, Meeker County, why they're showing a negative here, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, Representative Lanning.
Thank you. Well, I would hope that they'd have to correct any time one of these find a way to correct it. And if that is not in law, maybe it ought to be. My last question, I guess, would be I know there's a bill that's out there. Representative Mulry is carrying it. I was asked to carry it at one point from Revenue, and Mulry took it over on, I think, what conditional use deeds or this whole issue of when land is tax forfeited. My question is, does this in any way interact with that, or does that, either one of those, either this bill or that bill, cause problems for the other? That's my question.
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, I don't think so, but that the bill of Representative Mulery's is a fairly significant piece of legislation in that it does a lot of recodifying, of which is well overdue because it's such a hard tax forfeited laws to understand. But it also makes some real policy kind of choices, and so that's a pretty significant kind of bill. But I think that, you know, I don't think that this particular fund, all this fund is doing is it's a separate fund for timber and forest development. And so I don't think that has to do a lot more with all the public and use deeds, and it clarifies how cities can get them and how counties can get them and timing and all that. And so I think the two are very, very separate.
Ms. Baker, do counties have other special revenue funds that you can think of that they might have in a reserve?
Mr. Chair, I would guess they probably do. We can sure check into it, but
I mean, I think this is an interesting issue because you get into those that may have a lot of dollars here, and there might be some other funds potentially that you could move around. But
yeah,
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, on the special funds, I was thinking, you know, enterprise activities, if they run a nursing home, if they run a hospital, if they run, you know, a landfill. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that it's typical to keep those enterprise-type operations separate from the general fund.
Well, other questions or comments for the commissioner? Ms. Baker.
One last point, Mr. Chairman, members. As you can see that this is 2006 and 2007. I mean, all of the state auditor's data, we're always at a real time delay. And so, you know, how much they have in their accounts right now, you know, could be very different than this, because they could be accumulating that much more, or they could have spent some of it. And I think Representative Faust mentioned that in Pine County it was about $2 million, and this only shows about $1 million.
Yeah.
And so these kind of things are time sensitive to what they're using these accounts for and what's actually in the accounts. So,
the number that Pine County have reported to me is $1.8 million, mm-hmm. is what they currently have in it right now.
Is there anyone here in the audience that would like to speak for against House File 1724? Please state your name.
Mr. Chair, Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and we would just be in support of this bill. I think they already articulated that the flexibility in this account, just for the 2 years to get us through kind of some of the transition we're going through with the aid cuts and everything else, would be helpful. And as far as the question about other revenue funds, another one that we did look at in another committee was our law library reserve. That's another area. So if you're interested, we'd be happy to try and find some more areas where on a temporary basis we think we might have some flexibility there we'd be interested in. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matthews. Representative Faust, any last words that you have on the
first of all, thank you very much for hearing the bill. And if I can just, you know, we limited the amount of money that a county could take out to the amount of the aid cuts that they're getting, so that they can't just drain the whole fund in 1 year, which I think was a good thing to do. It also, you know, is hopefully going to help prevent property taxes from increasing in the counties where they're able to draw some of this money out, and that's really what got me excited about trying to do this. So I'd very much appreciate your support. Thank you.
Commissioner Holland, Representative Faust, thank you so much for your testimony. We do have a quorum now, so I'm going to lay over House File 1724 for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Members, we have a couple other bills we did earlier, so I'm going to lay over House File 1477. That was the Liebling bill for possible inclusion in the division report. And then on House File 481, I'm going to move to lay over House File 481 for possible inclusion. And then we also had the A1 amendment, which we talked about earlier, so I would move the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Now I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. So now I'm going to lay over House File 481 as amended for possible inclusion in the division report. All right, we have House File 1885, Representative Dietrich. Representative Dietrich, welcome to your committee, and you have someone that you consider to move House File. Oh, you can move your bill.
Yes.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 1885 for possible inclusion in the property tax division report.
Very good. And you also have an amendment.
Yes, I do. And I would also like to move the A1 amendment. It is technical in nature.
All right.
And when it gets the bill in the form that I desire.
Representative Dietrich moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House File 1885, what it does is it reduces the 2010 city LZA appropriation by $225,000 and makes a one-time payment to the city of Coon Rapids for $225,000. The reason for this change is really quite simple. This payment
is the amount that the state owes the city of Coon Rapids for the state's share of a joint powers agreement that was made between the state, the county, and the city of Coon Rapids in 1998. That's the brief reason why we should. So in order to help put this in context, I'm going to add a little bit of brief history, and I am doing so with the help of, I'm plagiarizing in fact, Pat Dalton. Thank you, Ms. Dalton. A brief history. In 1998, the city of Coon Rapids came to the legislature looking for a way to get the Minnesota Trunk Highway 242 project moved up in MnDOT's timetable, or to find another way to accelerate the funding of the project. Doesn't that all sound familiar? We have all of those in our districts that we're trying to do. The proposed solution was to allow a local sales tax authority to fund the project. Obviously, the tax committee did not support that proposal. Instead, as the letter that I have included in your packets states, that the state, Anoka County, and the city of Coon Rapids cooperated in a reconstruction project beginning in 1998. In order to start the project in 1999, the state, the county, Anoka County, and the city of Coon Rapids agreed that the city would finance the project using EDO bonds up to $11 million. The city would pay, would agree to pay the DO bonds up to $11 million a year, and that the state then was to pay the city $450,000 in two sums of $225,000 payments annually for the next 10 years. This special legislation increased the aid base by $450,000 beginning in the year 1999 and ending in the year 2008. Well, we all know what happened in 2008. The final payment was due to the city of Coon Rapids, and they had received already their first payment of $225,000. However, due to the unallotment process and the cut to LGA and market value homestead credit payments in December, the second and the final half of that payment was never paid. The state agency has still not differentiated between the loan payment due and LGA. And so the final payment is still due, and House File 1885 provides one-time final payment to the city of Coon Rapids. And that is the reason for House File 1885, is to get that final payment made. So I would stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. And Ms. Dalton, can you verify the truthfulness of her testimony here before the division report today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what Representative Dietrich said is correct. I think the one part that she left out is that when this payment started to be made to the city of Coon Rapids, it didn't originally come out of the LGA appropriation. A separate appropriation was made of $450,000 a year, and that was rolled into the LGA appropriation in 2005, which is why now it's being paid out of the LGA appropriation, because that separate appropriation got rolled in a couple of years ago. But it was originally an amount over and above the LGA appropriation.
Representative Hepner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if Representative Dietrich can answer this question. Maybe Council can answer this question. But this, you mentioned special legislation. Has this request ever been made before? Or this time, you know, has it been requested before, and then will this set a new precedence?
Ms. Bolton, would you care to answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dentmer, could you just ask the question again? I'm sorry,
I was trying
to cover this.
Representative Dentmer.
If you were in my classroom, I'd say, pay attention. No.
And I would apologize, too. And I do not.
I did the same thing. Well, my question was, Mr. Chair, has this request ever been made before like this? Are we setting new precedents? Is this something new? Is it a special request?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dentmer, yes, this is something new, but this is the Coon Rapids situation was also something new. We had never done an LGA adjustment that was paid for out of a separate appropriation as opposed to out of the general LGA appropriation. So there's not another circumstance that's existing out there right now that's similar to what happened with Coon Rapids.
Any other comments from the...
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. I think that Representative Detmer is speaking about the special legislation, and that happened in 1998. And so the special legislation, maybe, who knows, shouldn't have happened. Maybe it was a kind of a backdoor way of getting a project done. But either way, the bottom line now is that this, that joint powers agreement was made and the special legislation was passed, and there is still $225,000 due to the city of Coon Rapids. And now, as Ms. Felton pointed out, it shows up on the LDA run, and it is not truly LDA. It is the final payment. And then when the allotment happened, that even made the special legislation more complex, more special.
I'm going to get Ms. Felton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, one final note about this. The reason that this $450,000 payment was made was a compromise to avoid imposing the first local sales tax in a suburb. And it was trying to ignore setting that precedent. And so that's why this compromise was enacted in 1998.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just one...
Representative Dietrich.
And we just have to remember this really happened 10 years ago. And so we have a $225,000 payment that now shows up on the LDA run, and it is not for LDA. It got incorporated into there when the special legislation got more special.
It probably was the issue that made Representative Lincheski run for the first time. She's the only one that ran in 1998.
Well, thank you, year. City of Coon Rapids.
Yes. any other... Okay. Any other comments? Is there anyone here that would like to testify for or against 1885?
Well,
we're going to introduce those students.
Just pick one out and make them come up here and tell us what they think about it.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, Representative Garofalo, none of them, I don't think, are from Coon Rapids, because at this time, he's led this in. We have another ninth grade group from St. Louis Park School here today. Welcome very much. We must have had another ninth grade class earlier today. This isn't the same class, is it?
Same,
right, the same school, but a different ninth grade class. Very good. Welcome aboard. Anything else, Representative Dietrich?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I renew my motion for House File 1885 to be included
as amended.
As amended, thank you, to be included in the property tax division report.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we are now going to move to House File 1195, Representative Lanning's bill. If you remember, this bill is coming from one of the three working groups that was set up. Okay. Representative Lanning was very appropriately named the chair of this committee because of his previous work dealing with mandate reductions and looking at various mandates and how you could streamline things. Both as his work as a legislator, but also as the former mayor from Moorhead. I, Representative Lanning, I know the journey. Representative Dietrich and I got here back to the committee way ahead of you. And it wasn't because you weren't working very hard. You just had a few more stops to make. And I do appreciate it very much, your hard work on this, because this is one of the most important issues we're dealing with this year. And I talked to other folks who worked with your working group that gave it just tremendously high marks. So I just really appreciate your efforts, and I know the whole committee does here. So with that, if you would proceed, and we can hear what you've done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We took the scenic route to hear today. But I want to, at the outset, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the idea of putting together these work groups and having some focused, concentrated examination of some important issues related to our state and local fiscal relationships. And it was a pleasure for me to chair this group, trying to come up with ways to give local units of government more flexibility and to give them some relief on mandates. House File 1195 members I think is the most significant proposal in terms of mandate reform and flexibility relief that would be given to local governments in recent time, maybe ever. And, you know, to this point, members, we have typically taken on mandates one or two at a time, maybe. And that becomes a very inefficient way of addressing these issues. And so I appreciate this approach where we can give some focused attention to it. Before I go any further, I want to, and Mr. Chair, maybe I should, let me move that House File 1195 be considered for a possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you very much, Representative Lanning. And one comment to make is the bill you actually have in your packet is the first engrossment, but the summary is the second engrossment. So just for everyone's clarification, if you need to know a little more specifics on the bill, we'll have to dig that up, but we can, but the summary is correct. So thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the difference between first and second is some language we added in Representative Murphy's committee, cultural and outdoor resources, having to do with the library maintenance of effort provision and related, some related issues. And Ms. Dalton can give you a more authoritative overview of that when we get to that that point. Let me say here at the outset that thank you to Representative Loeffler, Representative Tilbury, Representative Detmer for their assistance in putting together this draft bill, and we appreciate that very much. Well, as everyone knows, local use of government for many years have been complaining about mandates, and so our work group decided that we're going to ask local groups to tell us what was of concern, and they all gave us long lists, lists that were far too long to be able to adequately address them in the time that we had. So then we asked them, well, give us maybe your top 10, and we saw that, and we said, that's still too long. And so we said, well, how about giving us your top three or four? And so we had the top three or four issues of concern to townships, cities, counties, school districts. And then we went through a process of, as a subgroup, work group, of picking and choosing among that list as to which items we'd like to take a closer look at and possibly incorporate into a draft bill. And we did that. We winnowed down the list, and then we put together a draft bill that we had an informal hearing over. And then we made some more changes as a work group, and as a result, we ended up with House File 1195. And as we've gone now, this is the fourth committee. There have been amendments that that we have accepted along the way. I'm not going to give you a detailed overview of the bill, but I would like to highlight it and call your attention to some of the key provisions. Article 1 has four key provisions. The first has to do with the truth in taxation process. And this has been one of the perennial complaints on the part of local units of government, that final truth in taxation hearing comes too late in the process. It comes right on the eve of when the new budget year starts. It's just simply too late to make significant changes in a budget. And having a hearing that late gives a false impression to the taxpayer that here at the late date you can make significant changes. So what this bill does is, so we're not going to do that hearing, but we're going to make it easier and better for taxpayers to be informed about what's being proposed by way of a budget for that local unit of government, and to give them more opportunities. And the local units have to announce, they have to put it on the formal notice that gets sent to all taxpayers. That still happens. They have to put it in that notice when they're meeting and invite the public to come in at any one of those future meetings for the purpose of expressing their questions or concerns with regard to the budget that's being proposed. Article 2 modifies the library maintenance of effort provision. There are those who would like to simply do away with the library maintenance of effort. I was not interested or willing to do that. I was very pleased that the library folks were telling us, look, we're in this together in terms of the budget shortfall we're facing. We're willing to do our fair share, and we're willing to come up with some language that would give local units of government, cities and counties, some relief, some ability to adjust their maintenance of effort in light of all of the budget cuts that they're facing as cities and counties. And so we've worked closely with representatives of the libraries and the counties and the cities in drafting this language, and rather than my trying to butcher this very complicated issue, I would like at this point to let Ms. Dalton say how give her the chance to explain this section and what we've got for you there.
Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Detmer.
First, I'd like to thank Ms. Dalton for the work you put into this working group. I know also but representative it was a difficult job, and we listened to a lot of different people from different groups within the communities, and thank you for the work that you did on this.
Very good. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Article 1, Sections 2 and 3 actually deal with the regional library maintenance of effort. Both of those are summarized in the summary. However, you're missing what is now Section 2, because that actually got added in Representative Carlson's Finance Committee. What this does is it essentially does a couple of adjustments proposed by the libraries and also proposed by the counties to provide some stability as well as to provide some flexibility when budgets are cut. The Section 2 that's in the summary, and I will talk about that, modifies the existing formula to basically change the minimum library maintenance of effort to be based on 3 years of tax capacity. Right now it's based on 1 year of tax capacity, and so there were some fluctuations, particularly since it's the adjusted net tax capacity, and so if sales ratios change, you could have some really fluctuating maintenance of effort requirements. So that was suggested by the libraries and was adopted. That reform will begin with calendar year 2010. And then the other changes in that section relate to if a local government, a county or a city, wants to reduce its maintenance of effort because of aid cuts, they have to notify the regional library system, and then they notify the state librarian who actually does the calculation. What Section 2 in the bill and Section 3 in the summary is the main changes. It basically says that right now, once a city or county increases its levy, every other year from there on, it must keep it at that levy amount. It makes it very difficult for cities or counties to give a one-time increase to a library system to deal with some one-time expenses, because once they do it, then they're kind of stuck at that level pretty much forever unless their tax capacity goes down. There's a few minor changes, times when this can go down. This basically says that your minimum levy, maintenance of effort is now going to be based on the lesser of your maintenance of effort in the last 2 years. So this allows you to do some one-time funding, extra funding for your library without it being permanently put into the base. Then the other thing it does, it allows a city or county to reduce its library MOE if general purpose county or city aids are cut, and if there's a cut based on a percentage of levy plus aid, then that's the percentage cut that the library or city maintenance of effort could be cut as well. However, if a city or county is only levying at the minimum right now, they aren't allowed to make any cuts. The minimum is fairly small. It's 12 $1.62 per capita, or 0.82% of adjusted net tax capacity. 30 counties currently levy at this minimum. Cities, on the other hand, and a number of counties levy at much higher than those minimums. And if they are levying higher than the minimums, then they're allowed to make a cut under this proposal.
Very good. Representative Lane?
This is, Mr. Chairman, members, this is a very complicated area, and that was highlighted in the hearing that we had before Representative Murphy's committee, and just how complicated this whole thing gets. And as Representative Detmer mentioned, Ms. Dalton guided us through that like the pro she is, and we couldn't have done it without her, that's for sure. The third major area in that first article says that any new or any changes in maintenance of effort or matching fund requirements enacted by this legislature and signed into law after January 1 of 2009 will require additional spending by political subdivisions shall not be effective until January 1, 2012. So basically it says we're suspending any new or changes in maintenance of effort, and they can't take effect if they cause local units of government to have to spend more money. They can't take effect until January 1 of 2012. This is a very significant thing, members. Of course, the one exception is if federal law comes along and says you shall or you lose federal funding, then that would be exempted under this. But if we took any action as a legislature, then that would be suspended until that period of time. The fourth provision in Article 1 has to do with levy limits, and anyone who's been listening to city and county officials over the years recognizes that's been an ongoing area of concern. We as a work group had a paper that was put together that listed the history of levy limits. I think it was like 15 pages long, just sort of point by point. Levy limits have been on and off over the years many, many times. If anybody's interested in looking at that, it's interesting reading. levy limits are hard to argue against when we're increasing aid, when we're giving cities and counties more money, because we're giving them that to provide some relief on property taxes. But when we're in a position of cutting aids, as we are right now, by imposing levy limits in that kind of environment, I think is basically saying that we're not trusting the local government officials to make those judgments. As a former elected local official, I think for the most part, local officials can be trusted to make those judgments. If they make the wrong judgment, if they raise their levy too much, they're going to hear from their constituents, as I did as mayor and a member of the city council over all of those times. Another thing about levy limits, and I've seen this happen in my experience, 28 years of experience on the local level, when a levy limit is in place, you have local units of government that are tempted to raise the levy to the limit, whether they need the money or not. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I think that kind of defeats the whole purpose of trying to control these local levies. So then Article 2 deals with a whole series of miscellaneous things, as we call them, items that townships, cities, counties have brought to us. And rather than boring you with going through and explaining each of them, if you have any particular questions, I would probably defer to one of the local associations, local government associations, to respond to those questions. Article 3, what's left of Article 3, it had one section that we removed along the way because of some problems we identified. Came from the townships, and the counties also had a concern about this. Under current law, new rules can take effect any time. And what the local government officials were telling us is that this month we can get a rule, next month we can get another rule that relates to that first one, and what do you do? How do you handle that kind of a situation? It gets to be very confusing and very problematic for local units. So now what this says is that we're going to have two times during the year that all the rules need to take effect. One of those two times. So we no longer have this thing where a new rule can come along at any time, and it may have some implications or relationships to some other rules. The last article, Article 4, provides for an ongoing process. As a work group, we took a look at what's in place now as a venue, as an opportunity for concerns about mandates to be addressed. What we find in law right now is inadequate and is not used much, and to the extent it is used, not terribly effective. And so this idea of forming a legislative commission on mandate reform was modeled after a bill I introduced 6 years ago. And I think was an idea that was ahead of its time. And I think now is the time for this. And what we discovered in the experience of this work group is we didn't have much time to do this, and we met a half dozen times or whatever it was in the span of a few weeks, and I think put together a bill that has a lot of merit and a lot of good things in it. We need some kind of an ongoing process, and what this proposal suggests is that during the interim, we would ask the House and the Senate to appoint some people to another work group that we call the Commission to be gathering input from local units of government as to what things need to be addressed. They would do like we did in the last month and put together a bill that would be presented to the legislature, and it would be a bipartisan process, a bill that would be brought to the legislature the next session, so that instead of doing these things one at a time, one or two at a time, we would have a package like we have now. And it seems to me there's a lot of concern about legislative efficiency, and by taking all these issues on one at a time is not very efficient for us, and certainly local units of government have to mount a lobbying effort for every individual pieces of legislation they might want to pursue, which is one of the reasons why we haven't had much progress. Well, the I can talk more about this commission, but let me just make a couple of points. The staff for this would be the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and we've talked with them about this. The funding would be provided this way. We'd take $100,000, $50,000 right off the top of the total local government aid appropriation that the legislature approves, and $50,000 off the top of the county aid. We're doing this for our local units of government, so it's appropriate, it seems to me, to take that $50,000 from each of those funds right off the top to fund this effort, and the largest portion of which might go to the LCC to cover their expenses to provide that kind of staff support. And we also have a provision in here that would enable them to make some small grants if there was a particular study that might need to be done on one particular mandate or whatever. And this commission is sunsetted. We're not doing something permanently. We sunset it June 30th of 2013. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that's more than you wanted, but it's a brief overview.
Thank you very much, Representative Lanning, and everyone who helped on this excellent piece of work. So, thank you. Anyone from the committee right now? Otherwise, I'm going to go to the audience. Anyone who would care to testify for or against House File 1195? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And we'll keep our comments brief, but I just wanted to thank Representative Lanning and the work group for bringing this bill forward. There are a number of provisions in here that are very helpful to counties, and he went over those. I just want to point out the two-year moratorium on the new or increased maintenance of effort matching funds is a cornerstone of kind of our county redesign project. We asked the legislature to hold us harmless going forward. We're still working to redress some of the MOEs currently in law. You can see some steps towards that in the library piece already in here. There's a number of others and other committees we're working on, but that's really important to us. We really think that's something the legislature ought to continue working on in the future. And the levy limit repeal also is, in this committee's jurisdiction, is really an important issue for us as we're trying to wrestle with the aid cuts and everything else as we balance our budgets. Again, I think the provisions in here, if there's any questions that you have specifically, I'd be happy to answer those, but those are the parts here in this committee that I think you're really interested in.
Thank you very much. This will work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities. We're the statewide association as well. And I, too, would like to thank Representative Lanning and other members of the working group for bringing this legislation forward. And I'd also like to offer Kent Fulham's good words on this bill. He is stuck in two other places, actually, and couldn't make it over here. And he, of course, is with the Township Association. In short, two of our biggest issues, if you will, from the city's perspective that we wanted to see included in this bill made it all the way through, one being the levy limit provision that's before you, and the second one being some flexibility along the lines of the maintenance of effort for libraries. In short, on the levy limit provision, we're very happy to see this in the bill, and want to thank everyone who supported us here, but also signed on to the other legislation that we brought forward under Representative Dabney's bill. It's a real important issue for our cities, over 2,500 who have levy limits, and we're very happy to see that in this bill. And to back up, I'd also like to congratulate the committee and everything that you did earlier in session when you had that four-committee overview on maintenance of effort issues. I thought that was just an outstanding educational opportunity for both the House and then those of us who hang around the Capitol. It is a confusing issue. We've been working with the library since about January 3rd on this issue and probably back to December. We, of course, would like to see more flexibility, but maybe that's something we work on in interim or later this session as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mark Ranum. I'm the legislative chair for the Minnesota Library Association. I'd like to express my appreciation to Representative Lanning for all of his work on this particular issue, and also Ms. Alden, who was really critical in the process. As you all know, she is the one who carries much of the water in terms of the technical expertise in this area. This is an issue for libraries that we've talked about for at least the last 16 or 17 years, since the early 90s when we went through one budget crisis in the state and libraries participated with a short-term solution to allow some flexibility for cities and counties on MOE for libraries. And then in 2003 again, libraries have always wanted to be at the table when their cities and counties, their real partners in providing funding, were going through these kind of times of crisis, of economic crisis. This is legislation, in my mind, that comes directly from work that's been done for the last 14 months with a group of librarians and county commissioners and people on all sides of this issue that worked through this issue starting about 14 months ago and came up with some ideas that obviously have found their way through into this bill, and it provides for structural solutions to this problem, and I think that's absolutely critical. The agreements that we've come to and the idea that library infrastructure is as important as individual library funding decisions in local communities, and trying to balance those needs is tremendously important. So we're very pleased to support this legislation. We know that it's going to mean some difficulties for some libraries, but we also know that local communities absolutely support their libraries. I don't think there's any doubt about that in the state. This allows them to keep them viable and keep them part of regional systems, and that's our overall goal for this particular legislation.
Mr. Ranum, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else care to speak for or against House File 1195? Not members? Any other comments or questions? I thought it was very appropriate, Mr. Ranum, talking about working on this issue for 16 or 17 years and coming forward. And I think Representative Lanning alluded to the fact that, we've talked about this for many, many years. You had a bill 6 years ago that would deal with something, but it is
very, very difficult. So I, Representative Lanning, I appreciate the leadership of you and your work group on this, and because I think it is very significant. We need to make some of these changes and increase that flexibility. So, Representative Lanning, any closing comments?
No, I hope that we can make these changes and take this action. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I guess we do have a couple here. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to members. I think you should know how dedicated Representative Lanning has been to this, and that when we ran into kind of a wall on a number of different issues on the maintenance of effort for libraries, he hung in there, even though every 4 minutes he's getting up to answer a call about the flooding back in his home district, and he's kind of juggling both things at once. It was impressive to watch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative
Beeson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to echo Representative Loeffler's comments, and in thanks of Representative Lanning. I just want to say thanks, and we really appreciate the effort, and these are things that have been talked about and yet so challenging. So my question is, Representative Marquardt, Chairman, do we have a Senate companion for this bill?
Representative Dietrich, not that I know of. I did meet with the property tax chair on these bills, and he would offer one of the three. And so, I think it's just, they had some work. I think Senator Rest was working on a mandate relief bill. So it wasn't that
they
were against doing that, but I think they had one bill that they were moving through, and I think that was primarily the reason why. So it wasn't that they were against the mandate stuff, but I think it's Senator Rest, I think, is covering that. Is that right, Representative?
Senator Rest has a bill that I understand. I haven't seen it yet, but I understand it has many of the same provisions this bill has, and I don't know what the differences might be. Be anxious to find that out.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's good, because I just don't want to lose track of those pieces. I think they're really important. Thank you.
Very good. Anything else? John, renew your motion or head?
I would renew my motion that House File 1195 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Representative Lanning. We have minutes to approve. Do I hear a motion to approve the March 24th meetings? A minute.
So
Representative Dietrich moves the March 24th, 2009 meeting minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. A little bit of a schedule. Next Monday we will be going over the division report here in committee on Monday, and that's going to be the regular tax time. I presume at 1 o'clock. At 2:45 on Monday, staff will be going over the division report. Then Tuesday will be for public testimony on the division report and possibly even amendments that day. And then the final markup would be Wednesday. So it should be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So if others have comments or any ideas as far as the division report, get those in as soon as possible. Anything else? Very good. Thank you. We are adjourned.
Yeah.